Speechless. I said to Marie in the back, I said, you realize I have to get up and speak after this, don't you? You know that. Yes, I do feel like a long-distance member of this center. It has been 3 years in a row, and every time Michelle calls me, I say, what, again? Not because I don't want to come see you. It's because my experience is people get bored with me after a little bit. So congratulations on your very poor taste. This is wonderful. I love coming here, and I always have lots to do, so it's a great excuse, because I just don't show up here, but there's other centers and other churches throughout the whole Northeast, and I use this as a jumping-off point. This is my third year in a row to be able to do it, and it's great, and I'm honored to be here, and I honor each and every one of you. I keep running into you all over the place, and I know you. I should come 4 or 5 more years in a row, and I will be a member. I'll sign up. Yeah. Well, I do tithe, but you just don't want me to tell you where I tithe. Maybe it won't be here. Anyway, I'm really honored to be here again, and it's great to come up, and I'm happy to see so many new people, and I'm happy to see so many people. And Shonda, you're magnificent. That song you wrote is tremendous. So. That one I can see being used all throughout the movement. You could choose to give it to Michelle and let her pass it out, because that was a marvelous song. Oh, so what am I going to talk about? I had a talk when I showed up here. Yesterday we were talking about that authenticity of the individual. We were talking about how to come forward, and for the sake of setting the stage, I'll repeat myself a little bit. One of my firmest beliefs is that we have been misled on our pathway of spirituality through our history and through some of the traditional understandings that we have. We have been led to believe that we're separate from everything that exists around us, that we have dominance over the world, and that because we have that dominance over the world, that it's us running it as opposed to it moving through us and living through us. And this has created some traditional issues and some problems in most of our lives. And the one that I hold on to is the reality and the realization that everything in the world is created for a purpose. And we know this. We know it. Basic high school science will teach you that there's a balance of life, and that balance of life needs to be met, and that every single entity, every single form that's ever been created is there to help support the overall picture of what goes on. The gnat is there to pollinate the date grove or whatever, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And that if you remove one of those, what you do is you create a hole in the cycle of life. And we believe that, we know that, and so therefore we honor all life in one form or another. What we do is we realize that it has a purpose in being, and we accept that, except when it comes to our own being and our own self. We somehow or other believe that we as human beings are put here by some cosmic mistake or some great accident that took place or some divine direction to say, this is all yours, enjoy, have a good time with it. And in so doing, what we do is we separate ourselves from that which we're already connected to. And when we separate ourselves, what happens is that we begin, as human nature will dictate, we begin to look at it and say, well, what is my purpose? Why would I be here? There's no reason for me, and the world would be better without me. I'm not talking about everybody here, but I am talking about a general collective ideal that sits in humanity. And from that idea that somehow or other I'm not good enough, what happens is we begin to hear and learn from our parents, from our teachers, from the peers, from our society, that what we have to do is become something in order to be of value. And that something is not something that we can ever really achieve, no matter how far we reach or how hard we run. It never seems to come within our grasp. So what we're doing is we're constantly seeking to play a role that is unlike who we are, trying to become something unlike what we were born for, in order for us to fit into that which we already fit into. And that creates a huge hole and chasm in our life and in our being. And like I say, I am speaking for myself and for my general observation of the world. I am not speaking for you. So if you do not embrace this concept, that's fine with me. Way to be. However, in my experience, I did. And what we talked about yesterday was we talked about how to become authentic and how to become transparent in our lives, how to really step forward and to express who we are in the world by being able to express it and experience it and bring it into our lives. And so a suggestion was put forward to me yesterday that perhaps what I could choose to do today when I asked somebody, what am I going to talk about tomorrow? They said, well, maybe perhaps you should give some tools or some ideas as to how you can become that authentic human to really bring that sense of fulfillment and productivity into your life so that you can experience it. Now, this is a huge thing to have somebody come up and do in a 20-minute period of time. And so I can't tell you how you're going to do it. I can't tell any other human being, just like any other human being couldn't tell me, how it is that you're supposed to become the true, authentic self that you are. How you're supposed to awaken that light within you so that you might shine it into the world. And discover and find, as I have, that when you do it, what happens is that everything that is necessary in order to sustain you, everything that is necessary in order to nurture you, everything that is necessary in order to support you is attracted into your experience, and you live a life of fulfillment and productivity as opposed to one of, as Ralph Waldo Emerson said, quiet despair. What I will tell you, though, is I'll tell you the steps that I have witnessed in others and that I've seen in myself that got me here, that awakened within me that sense of self-value, which permitted me to take the next step forward in my life to fulfillment and productivity. I'll also tell you that I'm not there yet. I'll also share with you that I, too, have dark moments when I look at my life and say, what am I doing here? But I will share with you that those moments are becoming so, so small that I hardly even recognize them anymore. Because as I step into this beautiful teaching that we call the science of mind, which really, though, is a teaching of truth that's been taught throughout the ages everywhere we go, what I discover is that it comes true. It is constantly being fashioned for me and attracting me to it. And that when I absolutely surrender myself to allow myself to do it, instead of hanging on to the trappings of my past that tell me how I should do it, that tell me who I should be, that tell me how I should act, that tell me what I could do, that tell me the comparative reflection of what I want to be as opposed to what I think I am. When I surrender those, what happens is that there is this beautiful, sweet, graceful breeze that picks me up and takes me where I need to be as opposed to where I think I need to be. Am I making sense? Are we on the same page? So I'll share with you how it happened for me, and I will give you the steps as I go through it. The first thing that I discovered was I went into this teaching and I went into life thinking it was the way it was. I really did. I can remember that I always felt successful. I always did well. I was always loved by my family. I was never abused. I did not come from a dysfunctional background. And I'm not bragging, I'm just sharing, is that I had a pretty easy thing, life, up until the time that I entered adulthood and went out to work in the world. And I had a pretty good picture of what I wanted to be. I wanted to be like my grandfather, like my father, like my father-in-law, like all the really instrumental figures in my life who guided and directed me to do certain things. And that was apply yourself, work hard, make lots of money, buy the trappings of life for your family, take care of your family. Do you know what I'm talking about? And so I accepted all that, and I thought naturally that the way to do it would be the way that they were doing it, which is enter the corporate world or enter the world of entrepreneurship and step in and start working from that point of view. So I took great pride as a young man in going to university, graduating, coming out, and setting my pathway for life, saying what I'm going to do is I'm going to build a family, I'm going to own a home, I'm going to have a dog, and I'm going to have, well, I wanted six kids, but I'm going to have 3.5 kids. I ended up with 2. What I want and what Dr. Deborah, my wife, wants are 2 different things. And as I have often said, I must check with my higher power, which is my wife, before I make these decisions. What do you think I should do, higher power? I don't know. What do you think, Deb? Yeah, sounds good to me. Okay. So I entered into my life and I worked. And I went to work, I got a good job in a corporation, and in very short order, my type A personality allowed me to rise to the top, and I was the president of a corporation at 28 years old. And my life was sucked. It sucked. You don't suck. My life sucked. I didn't know it sucked. I just knew that it was just monotonous. It was just like, you know, you get up in the morning, I got to where I was by working hard because I was really told that if you work hard, you'll get places. So I would get up in the morning at 6 o'clock in the morning, and I would get dressed, and I would go to my office, and I would work diligently, and I would come home at 8 o'clock at night, and I would go into my living room. I would watch TV at night until 3 o'clock in the morning. I would fall asleep on the couch. I'd get up at 3. I'd go to bed. I'd sleep till 6, I'd get up at 6, and I'd go back to work again. And this was happening like 6-7 days a week, on and on and on and on. And I did not have any sense of productivity, I did not have any sense of fulfillment. I had all the trappings, I had all the pictures, I had everything that I wanted up to that point, that I thought I was right on track to making a good life, but I didn't feel my life was wrong. I didn't feel it because I didn't know any better. It was the life that I'd witnessed and seen others have. So I just entered into that life and threw myself into it as best I could and kept going along that pathway until at one particular point I hit a path in my life where depression hit. And when depression hit, I needed to get out of the depression. I needed to find a way to get out. And I thought this was life. I thought this was what life was supposed to look like. Fortunately, I had a doctor who refused to give me chemicals or drugs. Instead, what he did was he gave me vitamins and talked me through this. And this was in Canada at the time. And so I started to take those, and my life started to lighten a little bit. And my daughter was born. And when my daughter was born, my life changed dramatically. Because I suddenly realized that working this 14 hours a day with no real connection, no real contact with people, wasn't serving me at all. So what would happen is that I began to yearn for spending more time with my daughter. And that really opened the door for me to recognize and realize that there was another way to live than the way that I was living. So the first step and the first understanding is to admit that there is something more that you would accept into your life. Now, I know, and I know, as I say, some of you are avatars and you don't need this lesson, but I will tell you something, is that the life that you have right now, no matter how great it is, could be better if you chose to open yourself to allow something new to enter into it. But if you think that you've got it made just the way you are, then believe me, you will do everything necessary to keep it the way that it is, because we don't want to change that because we think we've already done it. But deep inside ourselves, we don't. So what I've discovered is that when there is something within me that is disconcerting, something that is uncomfortable, something that does not feel right within me at that particular point, I generally look at it instead of ignoring it. Because I ignored it for 10 years, 15 years, I shoved it down, I pressed it down, I said, no, this is normal, this is normal, this is normal. It is not normal to be depressed. It is not normal to be frightened. It is not normal to not be in connection. It is not normal not to be productive. It is not normal not to feel fulfilled. That is the lie of our life. The truth of the matter is that all of those things are part of who you are and that they are the gift of who you are and that they reside within you right here and right now, even as I speak. And they reside within me as well. But they are covered up by the flotsam and the jetsam that we throw over top of it that looks like the rules that we've lived with for 10, 20, 30, 40, 50, 60, 70, 80, 90 years. And we cover it up and we say, this is the way it's supposed to be, and it's not. So when I feel discomfort, what I do is I allow myself to be aware of that discomfort. Now, being aware of that discomfort and being a person of very, very little faith served me nothing. So what happened to me was I immediately picked up after a period of time, and I moved and I began farming, thinking that farming was going to be the answer to my life. And for a period of time, it was, because it was different. It was a different experience than the one that I'd had before. It was a new learning curve. It was exciting in that way, in that method. But it didn't take me but 3 years before I fell back into that malaise, back to that ennui of life again. I fell back into it because things ceased to be new after 2 or 3 years, and then I found myself feeling lack of fulfillment again. I found myself feeling stressed. I found myself feeling poor. And in that state and in that shape, what happened was I realized I needed to do something about it. And I got it very, very coincidentally. My daughter asked about Sunday school, and I ended up going to a church, and bless spirit itself, the church I went to was a religious science church that taught science of mind. So I went there, and when I showed up at the church, it took me a couple of years to understand what was being said. You are born in the image and likeness of spirit itself, that your emotional base is the truth, and that love is that the real life of life, the real reality of your life. That you are spirit incarnate, except you've covered it with the blanket of your own belief system. And that if you remove that blanket, what you will find is that your life is filled with fulfillment, light, love, joy, peace, harmony, beauty. And so I heard it, I heard it, I heard it, but I was still hanging on to the pathway that was given to me before. And the awareness that there was another life that was possible was the only thing that led me there. And so for years, what I did was I went through that life trying to apply it because, you know what? I know how to make things work. I am really good at putting the pieces together to make something work in my life. The fact that what I'm making work in my life is the life that I just left is secondary. I know how to make the form to fit there. But there is a power in the universe that is greater than we are that knows what to do. And if we use it, it will take us to where we need to go. And where we need to go is to be able to create a new idea that is the foundation of our lives, as opposed to the old one that we were born and raised with, which, by the way, might have been perfectly good for our parents 40, 50, 60 years ago, might have been perfectly good for our grandparents 100 years ago, but they don't fit in an evolving world where technology and life changes every 3 days, it doubles nowadays. We need a new idea. We need a fresh idea in our life to be able to motivate us and catapult us and pull it towards it so that what we can do is we can rise above that sense of ennui, that sense of boredom, and capture that vision and that idea of a life well lived and well spent. And so what I found in Science of Mind was that I kept on trying to build it my way, never surrendering to that higher power within me. Not a higher power outside of me, not God knows what to do with me, but God knows what to do through me if I listen to it and if I'm open to it. And so I kept trying to do it. There's a power in the universe that is greater than I am, and I still think I'm smarter than it. I tried to put together an oak tree, but I couldn't get the molecules to fit. And yet there is a power that knows how to do it perfectly. And when I surrender to that power, when I release and allow myself to flow with that power, it takes me, it picks me up, and it pulls me to where it is that I need to go. And all it demands of me is that I surrender. I surrender what it is I think I need to do to become what I think I should be according to my past, not according to the divine light, the drawing attraction of the future. So there I find myself in that situation, becoming a practitioner and still not surrendering my life. I was more than prepared to surrender yours. I was a great practitioner. It was my life I was having the trouble with. So one day when I hit the bottom again and I found myself there, what I did was I took off and I was driving in my truck around my fields and I was treating, and I found myself saying this. I found myself praying in this attitude, treating in this attitude, which is, Spirit, I surrender. I no longer hang on to my past. I demand that I be lifted right here and right now to a life of like-minded people, to live a life where I feel fulfilled, where I feel joy, where I can get together with people of love, where I can get together with people who are productive in the areas that I give power to. I right here and right now surrender all things and anything that I hang on to in order to drive me forward to that place. My farm almost went bankrupt. It really did. Things started to happen in my life, and I found myself in a science of mind ministerial class, and all the way through it, I was like Ian saying, no, I'm not going to be a minister. I'm just here for the intellectual stimulation. And all the time I was there, my business was going down, and my spirituality was going up, but at that particular time, I will tell you, I did not know that. I didn't trust and have the faith that it was working right for me. I didn't have that sense within myself because I had not embraced the idea yet of surrender. What I had done is surrendered, and then I complained about everything that happened from the moment I surrendered onwards because it wasn't working the way I thought it was supposed to work. So the next step that I realized I needed to do was I needed to truly accept the surrender. I needed to step into it and allow that everything that happened from this moment forward in my life was guiding me and directing me to the fulfillment, the demonstration of the treatment that I put in place, which is a life of fulfillment, a life of joy, a life of light. And when I did that and began to move through that, things started to happen even quicker, even faster. They started to draw and attract me to it. So quickly that I'd already figured out what I was going to do with my ministry. I'd already worked it all out. It was no problem. I was going to get into our motorhome with my two kids. I was going to go up to the Pacific Northwest on a holiday with them, and I was going to drop by and visit various communities. And the very first community that had 1,200 people who showed up and loved me, I was going to start a church there. That's a joke. I came from a center with 1,200 people in it, and I really expected, oh, thank you. And I really expected that that was going to be the truth for me. It didn't quite turn out that way. So one day I'm in a conversation. I went for lunch after church. Visualize you going for lunch with friends after this service. So it was just very similar. And I was graduating from ministerial class, and so I go for lunch with my wife and with another couple. And as we're sitting with the other couple, where my wife and I built our church was the rock we built it on was our hometown. And so I'm sitting having lunch with them, and you know, it was one of those conversations where I was talking to the husband, and I could hear Deborah talking to the wife. And this couple had come from the Kelowna area, so they knew who we were, and she was becoming a minister as well. And so we're talking, and all the time I'm talking to Colin, the husband, I hear Deborah and Noli talking on the other side. And what they're talking about is, Ken should really go to Kelowna. Stop that. Ken should really go to Kelowna. I'm not going to Kelowna. That's where I was raised. I'm not going back to my hometown to start a church. Forget it. That's not going to happen. I know best. I'm going to travel around, find 1,200 people who love me. I'm going to build a church there. So, oh, no, they should go. So afterwards, I get into my car, and I'm driving back to the parking lot of the church to pick up my truck so we can go home. And Deb and I are talking, and I say to Deb, I heard you and Noli talking. She said, oh, really? I said, yes. I said, and we're not going to Kelowna. She said, why aren't we going to Kelowna? She said, we're not going to Kelowna. I'm not going to Kelowna because that's where I was brought up and raised, and I can't go to Kelowna. I'm going to some other place. And so we bickered back and forth. Bickered is the nice word for fought. And finally she said to me, Ken, can't you even open up your mind to something new, something fresh for you to go to? I said, no. I can't. I'm not going to Kelowna. I'm going to travel around my motorhome till 1,200 people love me. Then I'm going to show up and build a church there. So the next day, surprisingly enough, I had to go on this trip with another minister, a friend of ours named Reverend Tony Hagee, who ended up in Calgary. And so Tony and I get in the car, and we're headed up north. What we're doing is we're traveling from Palm Springs, where I was living at the time, up into the Sierras to Lake Tahoe, which is about an 8-hour drive in the mountains. And as we're driving along in the mountains, both of us were going to check out a place to build a church for Tony. And as we're driving along and I'm looking out the window, I keep saying stuff like, oh my gosh, this is beautiful country. I just love it. Looks just like home where I come from in Kelowna. I say, oh, this is so sweet. The only difference is in Kelowna, the grass is greener. The only difference is in Kelowna, there's more animals. The only difference is in Kelowna, the houses are better kept. The only difference is in Kelowna, et cetera, et cetera. And finally, Heggy turns to me and says, for Christ's sakes, Ken, why don't you go to Kelowna? Surrender works a magnificent way, but you have to be prepared to accept what it says to you on the way. Because that's not what I wanted to hear. That was like Deborah speaking to me or Noli speaking to me. Everybody was talking to me and telling me, giving me the signs and the signals of what to do with my life, except me, because I was still wrapped up in the blanket of my past. I hadn't surrendered. I hadn't given up to the degree that I needed to hear what the answer was that was coming to me. What I was doing was ignoring it every time, and actually I was arguing against it. Anybody here argued against their better good before? Yeah. Oh, you're perfect, whole, and complete. Am not. How can you say that? You don't know my life. My life sucks. I'm not perfect, whole, and complete. From your lips to God's ears. And so on we go. So we get up and we get there and we're coming back. So we're coming back. I'm trying to pick up the pace a bit here. We're coming back and we're driving along and we're coming back the 8-hour drive again. I was going to say there's a ship coming through. Whatever, God, whatever. I was thinking about cruising this morning. Anyway, we're driving back down again and I'm driving along and I'm thinking, and Tony and I are talking this through. And as we're talking it through and we're getting closer and closer and closer to it, the idea is beginning to that this might be something that we could do that would be a reality for us. So that's fine. I'm driving down, and I had the last volunteer job I had at the church I was in. I was very involved in Dr. Tom Costa's church in Palm Desert. And my last job was running the golf tournament, which in Palm Springs, you can imagine, that's a pretty good job. So that was my last job. I came down. That Sunday, I ran the golf tournament, and I came home. And when I came home, what happened was, do you remember those little black boxes that used to flash? They were called answering machines back in those days. And I walked inside the house, and Deb and the kids weren't there. And I walked over, and there my answering machine was flashing. And I picked up to hear the message, and nobody home but me. And the message came across, and it said, Ken Gordon, I'm looking for Ken Gordon. This is Reverend Lloyd Klein in Kelowna, British Columbia, phoning to talk to you. And I thought, well, I won't tell you what I thought. Because it wouldn't be polite to use that language. But I definitely was moved and shocked by this particular situation. And so I was frightened to pick up the phone and phone him. I was terrified. So instead, what I did was I waited till Deb came home. And when Deb and Kelsey and my son Mackenzie came home, I immediately got on the phone and I phoned him and I said, the conversation went like this. I picked up the phone and I phoned and I said, Reverend Lloyd Klein, please. And Lloyd came on the phone. I called him Reverend Lloyd then. Lloyd came on the phone and he said, speaking. I said, Reverend Lloyd, my name is Ken Gordon. I'm phoning from Palm Springs, California. I'm returning your call. Well, what would you like to say to me? And he said, oh, Ken, that's wonderful. I understand that you just became licensed and became available to begin a church somewhere. And I said, yes. And he said, would you consider coming and opening a church in Kelowna? Now, here comes the third point. You know, the first one is that you have to admit your life could be different. Then you have to know that there's a power that you can surrender to that will take you to the life that you want to have. The third part is when it shows up, you have to say yes. And you have to step into it with your heart and your soul, despite the fact that you're terrified of everything. I was terrified. I was standing in my house that I owned. I had a farm outside that I owned. I had everything that was sitting around me, everything that I wanted in my life. I had a beautiful church or spiritual community that I went to. I was more in love with my life, my wife, than I'd ever been before. I had a brand new baby who was sitting there in the form of a son. I had enough money in my pockets to survive, although my farm was dropping down. And I had my career pretty much worked out, and I was living in Southern California where there is no snow. And so, of course, I said yes. And when I said yes, he said, oh, that's marvelous. He said, that's tremendous. I'm so happy to hear that. Do you think you'll have any trouble coming to Canada because you're an American? And I said, no, I'm actually not an American. I'm a Canadian. And he said, oh, I love the way the universe works things out. And that's not the least of it. He then said, and so tell me, do you know the area at all? And I said, well, yes, my family lives there. I was born there. I was raised there. I graduated from high school there. I know the area very well. And that line went dead. And so I agreed to go up to do the first service in Kelowna to found the church. And I remember a couple of things. The first thing is that when I got off the phone, I hung up the phone, and my six-year-old daughter and my wife were standing there, and I said, we're moving back to Kelowna. And they were, yahoo, high fives, dance around, this is wonderful. And Deb and I immediately opened up all the books and tried to figure out, we have to sell the house, we have to move this, we have to get rid of the farm, we have to do all this work, and began to do lists of things that we needed to do in order to become fulfilled and to be able to fulfill the promise of our lives, of who we inherently are, to be able to put it into action. And we filled 3, 4, 5 pages without any problem whatsoever of activities we needed to conduct before we could do what we were born to do. And my daughter disappeared. And we looked for her, and so we went to her bedroom, and she was packing. And that's the next thing you need to do. You need to take the step into the calling that you've had, so that what you can do is you can begin the process. And you need to bring with it the faith and the surrender that put you there in the first place. Because from that moment forward, life became a trial if I chose to look at it. It became all the reasons why I should drop what I was doing to become the truth of who I was, and it was manifest and brought into being by my old belief system that I had to do something different. And so I went through 2 years of walking that pathway and saying, no, that's a lie. This is who I am. No, that's a lie. This is who I am. No, that's a lie. This is who I am. 2 years. And Deborah, all the time, Deborah, for that first 2 years in building the church, cried every day. And I would say, no. And the clouds came in, it snowed, and it was cold. And I would drive around doing my treatment work, looking at the sky, trying to find that one spot of blue that I could park in and just look at, and do my treatment work, and do my faith work, and surrender, 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 and build my faith to know that it must become the reality. So we tried to move out. This was May, we were supposed to go in July. We couldn't sell the farm. We couldn't sell the house. Nothing was moving. Why? Because we were emotionally addicted to it. I was holding on to it with fingers like I was grasping something, only to awake and find what I was grasping was a corpse. But I was trying to hold on to it so strongly. It was like, tear me away from here. Tear me out. So what occurred was one day in October 1st, 1993, Deborah and I took the next step that you need to do. You need to commit. You need to say, there is nothing in the world that is of higher value than my sense of fulfillment. There is nothing in the world of higher value than my living the life I was meant to live. There is nothing in the world of higher value than my surrender to that higher spirit and that higher intelligence within me. And so what we did was we packed up our motorhome, put the car on the back of it, loaded Deborah's clothes into the motorhome, bought the kids a plane ticket because there was no room for them anymore. No. Put them into the car with Deborah, and we drove north. I left $750,000 worth of rolling stock in the field of equipment, 1,100 acres. I left it in charge of one of my employees. I got paid about 10 years ago. He sent me a check for $10,000. He has a very successful farm in Southern California. Because By that time, I'd awakened to the reality that nothing was worth as much as my peace of mind and my value and my fulfillment. Nothing was worth as much as my peace of mind and my fulfillment. I couldn't serve my wife and my children if I weren't fulfilled. Such a selfish, arrogant act to think that we can be depressed and holding on to our past in that level and still serve humanity in some way. It demands of us that we surrender. It demands of us that we commit to it and that we step into it with all of our heart and all of our soul, because what we're stepping into is our lives. We're stepping into who you were born to be. We're stepping into who you truly are, not who you think you are, who you made up and who society helped structure to demonstrate is who they think you are. You're actually stepping into your life in the light of your being. And you're here in this center right now, and I trust you're hearing me. You are not who you think you are. You are a divine individualization of spirit. You are unlimited in everything and all things. The only limitation that fits in your life, whether it be health, wealth, creative expression, or loving relationships, is the doorways and the walls that you've structured around your being with your belief system that keeps you safe inside, that keeps you a prisoner in a society, and does not allow you to step outside to become the reality that you are. And when you step outside and become the reality that you are, and your neighbor steps out, and your children step out, and your friends step out, and the world steps out, then we will have a world that works for all. Our problem is not other people. Our problem is what we think about our own self and what our lives look like. And when we can transcend that and step into something different, then we have peace on earth. Then we have plenty for all. Then we live the dream. Then we live the truth. Then we live from our real, authentic, actualized being. So the steps are really simple. Understand and know that there's another way of being. And if you're dissatisfied in any way, shape, or form with what goes on, look at it and find out why you're dissatisfied. And don't deny your dissatisfaction. Then find yourself in a situation where what you can do is surrender to that power that resides within you that will lift you up and carry you, draw you, attract you to what it is and where it is that you need to go. And follow that pathway despite the fact that all the way along the line, you will be bumped and you will be jostled. And life will not look the way that you think it should look. But maintain your surrender. And know that once you have set into mind this truth, that you must be drawn and attracted to it no matter what. And that from every moment, everything, every activity from the moment that you surrender is taking you to the answer and the realization of your treatment and your prayer. It is there for you, no matter what it looks like. And then commit to that life completely, wholeheartedly, and with your entire body and soul, and then build on your testimonies. I am the spiritual leader of 500,000 people. 21 years ago, I was a depressed, lonely farmer in Southern California struggling to make a living. I am telling you, this stuff works, but it only works if you work it. Would you like to pray with me? Breathe deep. I believe in God and absolutely nothing else. Excuse me, you think I'm Michelle for a second. That's, you don't have to repeat after me. But I'm glad you believe in God and absolutely nothing else. That's the first step. I unify myself with this power, knowing that my value is of greatness. I move forward right here and right now with an acceptance of the truth of who I am as opposed to the opinion of who I am. I make myself known clearly with authority within my own life. that I am a divine individualization of spirit itself, that I am the perfect, infinite being for this time and this place right here and right now. And as such, I open myself this very, very moment, knowing and understanding that that greatness must come forward, not tomorrow, not next week, but now. That the ideas that come into my mind right now are ideas that facilitate my development and my growth. The ideas that I feel and I sense that I can have emanate through my body right here and right now is the living light of the truth of my being coming forward. I speak my word for this congregation, for every person here, knowing and understanding and appreciating that within them is the divine spirit of God and that it comes forward in them as I speak. I know that from this moment forward, we are open, we are aware, and we surrender ourselves to the greatness of who we are. Not the greatness of what someone else says we are, but the greatness of who we are. And that higher power moving and operating through us right here and right now brings into being everything that is required, attracts to us everything that is needed, draws us to everything that we need to experience and go through in order to expand our consciousness to a place of fulfillment, joy, love, light, beauty, prosperity, abundance. I speak my word knowing without question or without hesitation that every step that any person takes from this moment forward is divine in its nature, knowing that that power brings us against that which we need to learn and that we joyously, easily move through it, that that power within us dissolves any doubt, dissolves any dissatisfaction, dissolves any depression, and simply leaves behind the lightness and the beauty of that which it is. I speak my word knowing that this takes place right here and right now and joyously accepting it as my truth. I surrender it back into that universal mind, which is your mind, my mind, and all mind. And I demand that it be my truth, and I live from it with faith. I let go and I let God, and I ground this by saying, and so it is. God bless you.